You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Boston Strongcast. You probably haven't heard from me for a while. My name is Alyssa Orlando. I'm the producer of the show. I just wanted to let everyone know before we go into today's solo episode that this is going to be the last episode of 2019. We are going to take a couple weeks hiatus and then bring the show back in 2020. So today will be the last episode and you'll hear from Kevin solo. If you have any questions, feel free to DM us on Instagram. Our handle is Boston Strongcast. And I hope for nothing but strength for you all in the new year. Thanks so much and enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm going to do a solo episode today and I'm going to talk about a pretty popular topic in the strength training world, and that's going to be periodization. I took a USAPL club coaching certification over this weekend, and you know, I do want to discuss that a little bit. I think it was a very good course, and if you're a beginner coach to, you know, a personal trainer or a coach somewhere, and you're trying to institute some of the lifts into your programs, start a high school powerlifting team, or even a small powerlifting group wherever you're working, I think it is an awesome course for that. I think even if you're a newer lifter, I understand it's like for coaching and stuff, but if you're a newer lifter and you maybe have competed one or two times, I think it's a great way to get familiar with the sport, with the rules. Some technique is covered, which I think is really good. And it's done in one day. So, I mean, it probably could be stretched out over a couple of days. But you know, with the one day, I think they do a good job of covering the important topics in a short day. And you know, and for somebody like me with more experience, a lot of the information was just, it's stuff that I already knew, but I felt like Zach did a really good job of like telling stories and keeping my interest in. And there were good discussions about certain topics and stuff, and it's great to network. So, you know, even more experienced coaches and lifters can get something out of it. You know, with that said, they do talk about theory a little bit in the course, and this is what got me thinking of doing this podcast. So one of the things that they discussed is periodization. However, they only talk about two periodization models, linear and daily undulating periodization. You know, and it's great because both of those models are very basic, easy to follow models. And this is not by any means a dig towards the course. They have very limited time to get this stuff through. And I wasn't going to raise my hand and start throwing curveballs up there and stuff, talking about other means of periodization and planning training and stuff like that, because that's just not the place to do that. However, a podcast is. So, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, people just, I think understanding the history of periodization, who it was for and where it came from, is extremely important to understand in order to practically apply it. And I think that gets lost. You know, we're in this period of time right now where daily undulated periodization seems to be like what everybody wants to do, and where everybody like wants to take their training and stuff. But, you know, it's kind of the same prepackaged deal as linear periodization. And it's not so different from conjugate training than people think. So first, you know, in terms of periodization, there was a period in time where basically all training that was performed was concurrent training, meaning that multiple skills were being trained at the same time. So then Medvedev in Russia, he basically looked at the training performed by Olympic athletes in the 50s. for 1952 through 1956. Upon doing this, he saw some trends in programming. So this is kind of where the start of periodization came from. So, like, you know, by definition, periodization is the planning of training. So what they did, so a major piece in planning training was Hans Seeley's general adaptation syndrome. So the general adaptation syndrome has three stages. It has an alarm stage, a resistance stage, and an exhaustive stage. So basically, you take a person, you throw some stress at them, the fight or flight response kicks on, and they respond to it. So this is the alarm phase. This happens a few times, you get into the resistance stage. So the resistance stage, you'll see the person, they kind of come below homeostasis, so to speak. And so let's look at it at training to make this more simple. So you have a person, they go, they exercise, right? They do some squats, some bench press, whatever they do on their given day. And then they're sore. So they have that fight or flight response that kicks in while they're training. And then after training, the recovery starts, but there's been some damage. So it takes time for that recovery to come back. You do enough of these exposures over time without doing too much. And what happens is you kind of redraw that homeostatic line. You know, and the idea of planning training was to avoid the exhaustive stage. So you want to spend as much time in the resistance stage as possible without exhausting the individual. So this is where overtraining comes in. So let's say this brand new person tries to squat 7 days a week and bench and deadlift. Let's say they want to run full meet 7 days a week. At some point, they're going to hit that exhaustive stage, that overtraining. So getting back to Matveyev, so he analyzed the results of the Soviet athletes from 52 to 56, and he compared the training plans of the most successful athletes and came up with a plan for the Soviets for the 1960 Olympics. So during this period of time, the Soviets were having unprecedented success in sports. Now, when I'm talking about Olympics, powerlifting is not an Olympic sport. Weightlifting is, but it makes up a very, very, very small piece of Olympic sports. So these training plans are being made for Olympic athletes, not strength athletes. This is something that's really important and that needs to be kept in mind. So, you know, once Matveyev came up with the idea of planning training, the Russians began instituting a longer-term athletic development plan. So this was known as the process of achieving sports mastery. So I've talked about this in previous podcasts before. The training that the Russians use, it starts at a young age in schools. They have certain schools are more popular for certain sports, and they kind of, it's like a college having majors but done at a younger age, right? So if somebody wants to be a power lifter, they'll go to a school that focuses on powerlifting. And usually they start these schools at a young age. So as far as I understand it, the Russians actually all do gymnastics at a really young age. And then from the time they're like 8 to 10 years old, they start doing like unloaded movements, you know, maybe with PVC pipes or something, and a lot of GPP. So like, you know, box jumps and sled pushes and kettlebell swings and stuff like that would be considered the GPP stuff. As the lifter ages over time, the amount of GPP decreases, the amount of specific sports training increases, and all the way up through hopefully being a master of sport or master of sport in international competition, which are the highest levels within the Soviet sports system. I used powerlifting as an example, but this is for all sports. So the main goal was to develop the Russian Olympic system, not the Russian powerlifting system. So as these programs are being instituted, Russian sports scientists realized that there were some changes that could be made that would allow them to better perform their their skills, or better display their skills within their sport at the given times of their competition season. So this is where Yuri Verkhoshansky comes onto the scene. So his earliest research looked at what is known as the principle of dynamic organization. So he viewed sport as a problem-solving activity in which movements basically supply the answers to those problems. So since movement is controlled by the nervous system, training should be utilized to enhance and create more efficiency within the nervous system for those movements. What he also stated in his earliest research was that movement solutions they're always changing. The body is constantly looking for a more efficient way to do the same tasks. So this here is kind of the start of, so I really like the dynamic systems theory constraints-led approach of training, and that's what I use even here in powerlifting. And that's the idea of a constraints-led approach is you're allowing the lifter to explore various movement solutions for the same problem. So we don't use competition stance and bar placement on the squat a lot. We move the feet around, we move the grip around, we move the bar up and down the back. We're constantly changing things, but we're always executing the lift to proper depth and standing up with it. So the rules of the actual sport of powerlifting are always applying to the lifts themselves, unless we're altering range of motion. So I'm constantly giving them various options. So this just allows them to explore and see what solutions there are out there and potentially what solutions that they could be better at, right? Because we never know what circumstances are going to come up. And there are going to be times where, you know, maybe a close stance squat hurts your hips a little bit and you have to go a little bit wider. But if you have an inability to execute with a wider stance, you know, you're gonna be in a tough spot, and it's gonna be very difficult, if not impossible, to hit a personal best. So being able to be strong at all angles just gives you options when ultimately the little nagging things that could potentially be problems, you can mitigate those problems and you can still increase performance. And then once, you know, the problem kind of settles down and goes away, you can bring back those other stances and they tend to be fine. What I've found from my experience is a lot of those little nagging things are due from are just overuse. So whether you're training with too much volume, the same positions with too much volume, or not paying attention much to the lifter themselves because you're too worried about the actual plan. And this gets tied into, like, going back to that course, when you have a lot of beginners with like linear and daily undulated periodization and stuff, you know, and they see a lot of examples, what they'll see is, like, let's say week one, we're going to do a 5x5 at X amount of weight. Week two, we're going to do a 5x4 at a little bit more weight. Week three, we're going to do a 5x3 at a little bit more weight, and it's going to continue to go in this process. I think what people need to understand is it doesn't necessarily have to be linear like that, right? There's no reason why just because there's a new week, you have to increase weight. And I think this can be dangerous in the hands of beginners because they'll just do that anyways. And if you're not paying attention to your lifter, what's going to happen is they're going to run into problems at some point. So, you know, I think a good example of this, and I forget where I heard this. This may have been on like an Elite FTS podcast, or it could have been in an article on Westside Barbell somewhere. But the Westside Barbell guys, as far as I read about this somewhere, I have no idea if this really happened. If they competed and they left weight out on the platform, so let's say either their thirds were easier, they missed some thirds after some huge jumps on seconds, but there was a bigger total that could have been had on that given day based off of execution, weight selection, any of those things. What they would do is their dynamic effort work, they would run the exact same dynamic effort work for the same sets, same reps, same exercises, same weights as they did in the previous cycle that got them to that point for that competition. Because their goal at the next competition is to go out and to just get what they left on the platform at that given period in time. So the max effort stuff will still rotate like they normally rotate it, but the dynamic effort stuff stays the exact same. And this just allows them to recover better. So, you know, you already have a total PR that's out there. You just need to be able to go out and execute at the next competition. So what I really like about this is it shows that they're not rushing to get things done, that like platform lifts are the only things that matter. And I do this a lot in our program. So if I put some dynamic effort work in there, some rep work in there, and I'm looking for, I'm just making up these RPEs because it varies depending on the lifter, where we're at in training, where their competition schedule's at, and a number of other variables. Like sometimes in these training sessions later in the week, I'm looking for lower RPEs, let's say like a 7-ish, right? Somewhere in a range around there. And the first week that they do it, it's an 8.5 or a 9 for their last set. Now I have two options here. Typically what I'll do is I could just lower the weight, cut the sets, do something like that, right? Because during these days we use minimal rest options. Or what I could do is just keep it the same. And what I like by keeping it the same is that it shows me if they are getting better and if they are recovering. So let's say week one, it's an 8.5, last set RPEs, RPE 8.5. Week two, I keep everything the exact same and it's an 8. Week three, it's a 7. It shows that they're recovering and they're hitting the numbers that they should be. The technique and the speed and everything else is there. It shows good signs. So now let's say week one, last set RPEs 8.5. Week two, I keep it the same because I want to see RPE 9, 9.5, or there's even a missed rep. And now we're talking, the percentages here are light. Like in a lot of cases, it's minimal rest with like 70, 75%, sometimes even less with some accommodating resistance or a pause or whatever it may be. And it's going up. It's showing me that they aren't recovering. So sometimes what I'll do there is I have a number of options. I can cut the volume way down on the following week, but oftentimes what I tell them to do is to skip that day. Maybe just come in, just do some quick bodybuilding stuff and get out. Just giving them one less day so that they can actually recover. So if you look at that block over a period of time, it starts high. The next week's the exact same, but the internal load gets higher, and then we take a week off. That's just a plan being flexible and adaptable to the actual lifter. So things don't have to progress every single week. Like a 7-day training cycle is just because that's how the calendar is and that's how most people's schedules are. So that's why they use that type of program or that type of microcycle or, you know, a month being a mesocycle. It just follows the calendar. There's no, you know, physiological reason for that. It's not like all of a sudden you just start a new week and it's like, oh, this person adapted because 7 days has passed since the last training day. So it's something to keep in mind. Let's get back to Verkhoshansky. So what he saw is he saw problems with the concurrent style of training. So there was an issue with trying to train all the skills at once. Again, remember this is on Olympic athletes. And the problem was is a lot of these Olympic athletes, they need to be quick. They need to have top end speed. They have, you know, they need to be agile and strong and powerful. There's so many qualities that they need to train to be really good at their sports that in order to hit all of those things, it was just becoming too much to do, you know, let's say in the gym setting. So what Verkhoshansky decided to do was to focus primarily on one aspect of training while attempting to maintain the other aspects of training. Now, maintaining the other aspects of training becomes easy if they're still playing their sport, because all aspects of their sport are going to be part of their sport. So if they're still playing their sport 1 to 2 times a week or whatever it is, they're going to maintain certain qualities that you're not training in the gym just from participating in their sport. You know, and all strength too, like all strength development is going to be specific to the sport. Like for the decade or so that I was wrestling, I got much stronger at wrestling, but my barbell lifts didn't go up because of wrestling. In hindsight, you could maybe potentially make the argument that my barbell lifts would have made me stronger in wrestling, but I'm not 100% sure that's true because it was never an issue. And at that point, if I added in more barbell lifts to try to increase my strength during those periods of time, I wouldn't be able to recover. So the lack of recovery from trying to strength train and do the hard wrestling would have been too much. And this is why Verkhoshansky wanted to break up training into various blocks. So maybe in a block where I would have had a lot more higher intense wrestling stuff, my barbell lift volume would have been way down and we would have focused on a different aspect of training. And this was known as the conjugate sequential training system. Now, this is not to be confused with the conjugate method that Westside uses. So Westside uses the term conjugate to mean pairing of various skills. So conjugate is a concurrent training program. The conjugate sequential system in Russia is block periodization. Very, very different. Those two things are each very, very different. So each block focuses on a different skill. So that's where your hypertrophy block, your strength block, your power block, whatever it may be. And that's where this came from. So Verkhoshansky was very outspoken about concurrent training systems, also known as complex parallel training. That's a synonymous term with concurrent training, that those were only for more lower level athletes, right? They just need to develop more overall coordination and stuff. So basically like GPP, where the younger athletes were training multiple qualities at once and just building a base, concurrent works better under those circumstances, is what Verkhoshansky was saying. But as they become more elite, they need more volume in each specific skill set to get better. Again, keep in mind, this is not specific to powerlifters. Powerlifting in and of itself is not a very high-skilled sport. Now, I do think to lift, 800, 900 pounds on a squat is extremely skilled. I'm not saying that it's not. But powerlifters don't need to be agile. The way that they need to be quick and fast is very different than somebody on a field. They don't need to learn how to respond to certain environmental elements like defenders. They don't need to learn how to respond to other environmental factors like their teammates, the weather, the field surface. There's so many other things that go into field and court sports that powerlifting does not have to deal with. Powerlifting is a low-level skill sport compared to the other ones. This is why I lean more towards a concurrent training system, is because it just doesn't require all of the same things that those other sports require. And the way, I mean, I think people overanalyze some of these things, and like they just read these concepts and the ability to practically apply these ideas gets lost quite a bit. So I do think that block periodization for field and court athletes makes the most sense. You know, as somebody who played soccer through college and then 10 plus years of doing the MMA stuff, I do feel that breaking up training like that is more appropriate, because if I just came in and tried to do, West Side conjugate type of program, I wouldn't have never been able to recover for those sports. So there are some adjustments that need to be taken into consideration. So daily undulated periodization is basically, instead of having blocks, each day would represent an element of training, right? So like for powerlifting, you'll have a hypertrophy day, a strength day, and a power day, for example. So instead of breaking it into blocks, you break it up into days. I think this is what kind of drives me nuts a little bit. So I'm going to go off into a little bit of a rant here. But it seems like all the lifters that utilize a daily undulated periodization program tend to bash a West Side conjugate type of program. So West Side uses the dynamic effort, max effort, and repetition effort stuff. So they take max singles of either a squat or a deadlift, usually with some type of specialty bar, accommodating resistance, whatever. It's not the actual comp lift, but they'll typically be in their comp stance and doing all of those things, just changing some elements of the lift, and then a bench. And then they have dynamic effort, upper, dynamic effort, lower. And then the repetition work is basically their bodybuilding stuff. That's training multiple elements at one time. Then you take a daily undulated periodization program that does hypertrophy of 6 or more reps on one day, strength of 3 to 6 reps on another day, and power 1 to 3 reps on another day. That's the same thing. They're literally using a concurrent training system. So it's just the viewpoint of what they're trying to work on a given day is just different. So a daily undulated periodization program is looking to develop hypertrophy, strength, and power, while a West Side conjugate program with the max effort days are looking to develop absolute strength. With the dynamic effort days, they're looking to develop central nervous system efficiency in the lifts, as well as increasing rate of force development. And with the GPP, the recovery method, they're doing, that's their, basically, let's say that's their hypertrophy slash recovery type work. Now, what I don't understand is when I read stuff online, so I'm curious what people say and stuff about conjugate. I was like this at first. I thought the lack of specificity. But when you think about it, so most daily undulated periodization programs uses very little or no variation whatsoever, while a West Side program will use quite a bit more. A conjugate program, using the term conjugate like it's used here in America, will use a lot more variation. What's more specific? A set of 6 or more? A set of 3 or 6, or a heavy single. Heavy singles are the sport. So to me, max singles are way more specific than using a daily undulated periodization program. Now, you can't just max out every single day, so using lighter weights and improving other aspects necessary to improve within the sport of powerlifting becomes important. You know, those aspects are, like Verkhoshansky stated in his earlier Principle of Dynamic Organization, central nervous system efficiency, so technique. So this is why, like late in the week, I will use rep work using certain variations, some of which I had learned from Shaco, some I take from Westside, and some I've made up on my own. Or I will use dynamic effort days. So the dynamic effort days are there to build rate of force development. So if a lifter looks slow and needs to increase speed in their lifts, we'll add these in. Also, the dynamic effort days I tend to do a lot lighter than I do with the repetition work. So if I feel they can handle more lighter volume like that, or they're a little banged up but the lighter weights don't feel bad, like I can use that as a recovery means. With the repetition work that I do within the lifts to focus on technique at the end of the week, I tend to use intensities that are a little bit higher, but the overall number of lifts tends to come down. So there are times where that is just easier for that lifter to recover from, depending on what it is. But it gives me a lot of options. Now, when we're getting back to like what Verkhoshansky was saying about training all the skills within the sport. So I think Westside has it because those are the skills of the sport. You know, your absolute strength, your rate of force development, your technical efficiency, those are the skills of the sport of powerlifting. There is no sport that you won't practice your sport and the skills within your sport every single week. Like, you know, I'm sitting here, I have ESPN on in the background and it's highlights of NFL football on Sunday. Those guys are literally utilizing all of the skills within the sport on a given day. Why wouldn't you train all of those skills, right? So in practice, they're hitting all of those skills. You know, whether it's throughout the week, you know, however they do it. So for me, for powerlifting, we're practicing the actual barbell sport. It's an actual barbell sport. So what we do in the gym is practicing for the sport. Like periodization is just not necessary for that. Like, you know, do you think the New England Patriots are like, hey, we're in a hypertrophy conditioning block here, so we just need to get way more reps in training before we move into a strength block where we're going to do less reps, but we're going to raise the intensity. No, they're kind of doing that stuff all week long, you know, tapering into the following week and stuff. So, you know, it's for me, when I look at powerlifting, we're practicing the sport. Periodization just doesn't seem to apply. Now, periodization, another problem with it is it gets back to like each week you need to do something. Like it's assuming that time periods are required to see, and that specific time periods are required to see certain physiological adaptations. Like, 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to build muscle. 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to build strength. 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to increase power. Like, sometimes you need more, sometimes you need less. It's not always like that. And each week, it can't just always go up. Like, the program needs to be flexible and adaptable to the changing individual each day that they come into the gym. You know, so I like to just kind of base training, put them in positions. We're going to practice straining. That way you can learn different solutions to different problems throughout training, where I'm going to do things that make you move a little bit faster, and maybe I shorten the rest so there's a conditioning component that brings, you know, it's harder to maintain technical proficiency during fatigue. So like there's other ways that I can like help them develop the skills that are required for powerlifting. I don't think it's necessary to plan out 12 weeks at a time, and I think it's literally impossible to do a good 12-week program. You know, and I, you know, just a quick thing about variation is it allows the lifter to continue to lift heavy without needing to take a step back. So if there's no variation, like one, training's boring without variation, but if there's no variation, you're trying to do heavy singles, this just won't work. Because, you know, Shika would say after 1 to 2 weeks of utilizing 90%+ weights, you'll see a decrease in performance. Louis Simmons will quote some Russian texts that say 2 to 3 weeks, the same thing. But most of the majority are in agreement that if you train consistently at those weights, you'll see a decrease in performance. But with variation, you don't, because each variation comes with, one, a different problem. So it feels very different to the lifter. And two, the absolute loads are going to change. So a comp squat and a high bar wide stance squat with some type of accommodating resistance are going to have very different absolute loads and very different strength curves. So you can manipulate all kinds of different things within each lift to keep the lifter progressing forward and healthy as healthy as possible over the course of their training career. And what people don't realize too about the max singles is, one, it gets the lifter used to competing. They compete every time in the gym. It develops their ability to strain. They stop being scared of weights. There's a big psychological component to it. And it also helps the coach. So for me, I'm calling their attempts a lot in the gym so that when we get to a competition, I've done this so many times with this lifter that I'm comfortable calling third attempts. And, you know, at Nationals, we had a greater than 90% third attempt make, and more than half of the lifters hit an all-time deadlift PR on their third attempt. So it gives me that ability to see those things and to actually practice my skills as a coach with attempt selection later in a competition. So it's not only training the skills of the lifter, it's training the skills of the coach. Now, we'll look at the research that says, you know, periodization tends to be better than non-periodized programs when you look in the literature as a whole. Now, there are some studies that show that it's not any better, but they tend to be on complete beginners. So maybe beginners can just do anything, and there's an argument to kind of break apart that science. But the majority of the periodized research studies are also done on beginner to intermediate lifters. And the intermediate lifters, when you look at their 1RMs, they're very low. They're not elite level power lifters. And oftentimes in the periodization literature, one group will just do the same thing every single week, and the other group they might start at 10s and then 8s and then 6s and then 4s and then 2s and then singles, right? So somebody like John Kiley, who's very outspoken against typical periodization, says that the variation of training, so changing the loads and the sets and reps, is why it probably works. And that very well may be true. But when I had a conversation with Dr. Lonecki, he believes it's because it's getting closer to the more specific 1RM. That in order to increase 1RM, you should be training 1RM because of sports specificity. And there's a lot of published research that literally shows that. That the higher the load, the greater it is at increasing 1RM. So a 1RM will be better than at increasing 1RM than a 2RM or a 3RM or 4 or 5. And it gets, you know, less specific as it gets further away from that one. So if we get back into the periodization, linear and daily undulated periodization, and, you know, the coach is arguing that West Side is not specific. To me, it's the most specific out of all of them because it's the only one that does heavy singles. And they found a way to incorporate heavy singles frequently because recovery can become a problem. And I don't necessarily think it's physiological issues with recovery. I think it becomes psychological, where you get that, like, because it seems in a lot of those studies where they push the intensity like that, there's high rates of burnout. This is why if on week one in a cycle, let's say, somebody hits a max effort single and it's like an RPE 10, right? And there's just, I am not comfortable putting 5 more pounds on that bar in a week because I think the lifter will miss. I will have them come in the next week and we'll take a percentage of that previous week's max single and just do some sets and reps. And then on week three, we'll try to, you know, hit something within the range of that single week one. So it could be less than that single, you know, depending on what it looked like and stuff. But usually with that rep work, you get to really like feel some good technique stuff and like learn something so that you can improve by about 5 pounds on week three. And then the new exercise will come in. So I found we don't have to rotate exercises as frequently as Westside does, that we can rotate exercises every 3 weeks, you know, and we can just use rep work to kind of fill the gap. So each exercise will have about a 2 to 3 week working window. And, you know, sometimes you can just add 5 pounds each week and it goes perfect and great. Other times you can't. So, you know, you can kind of fill the gaps with some rep work in there to work on some technique. The next best thing, right? You know, Louis Simmons was very outspoken about the flaws of Western periodization, and that's why he came up with his idea of what works best in like concurrent training and stuff. There is by no means any argument saying that the lifters of Westside are low-level lifters. They're as high-level as they come, and they're seeing success under these types of training protocols. I've been there and I've had those views that, you know, Westside was just not specific, that the strength curve didn't match the strength curve of each lifter that they would need on the platform. Like, you know, using a lot of accommodating resistance makes the squat easier at the bottom, but it's harder in the raw lift. That's not false. That's exactly what the bands will do. But, you know, at the same time, it's working on other skills and elements within the lift. So, you know, the like what Verk Oshansky talks about with periodization and Tudor Bompa and whoever else about periodization is like you need to maintain certain skills while working other ones. That's important. And you do need progressive overload over time. But you can only overload the person as much as they're able to recover from. So this is where like manipulating the variations to manipulate training loads can come into play. Whether you're going to use rep work or dynamic effort work later in the week can come into play. There are times where I'll put somebody on 3 days a week instead of 4, just to give them an extra rest day. You know, but it doesn't have to follow some, oh, because we did X amount of volume week one, we have to do more week two. We have to do more week three. There are times where in a wave with somebody, literally the training volume stays the exact same. It might go up 5 pounds on a max effort lift. So total for the week, for an entire week of 3 competition lifts, might be an increase of 15 total pounds. Like, that's not unheard of. But they're, you know, the technical efficiency might be increasing, whatever it may be that we're looking at, you're seeing progress. And we're seeing progress in various skills by doing it that way. And I have just found that my lifters actually recover a lot better using a program like this than they ever did doing more higher volume stuff. I have just found for myself and my lifters that volume is just much harder to recover from than intensity. So if somebody's like really stressed for time, feeling a little banged up, but you know, overall healthy enough to push some weights, we might just do the max effort lifts of the week and nothing else. No back downs, no accessory work, nothing. And we'll just come in, do a, and you know, we may be a little bit more conservative on the single and, you know, not a RPE 10. And we very, you know, rarely, most, you know, I kind of joke around about this, but you get the point. Like 9.5 to 9.9, like leave 5 to 10 pounds for each week so you can get better out there. But sometimes that catches up, or sometimes what you think is going to be a little easier is a true 10, and you gotta make some adjustments to the program. You know, another problem with like just running a sub-maximal program was it didn't have psychological consequences. Like the lifters, all of a sudden, you get 95% on the bar and they would start freaking out because they never see weights like that. They're not seeing max attempts, so they're never practicing the sport. And then all of a sudden on the platform, they have to participate in the sport with judges and crowds and all these different psychological components, and they're just not ready to do it. So the heavy singles train those competition skills. It's really important. And like I said before, we train based off of the rules of powerlifting in the sport. So even if it's a high bar wide stance squat, you got to take it to depth and follow those rules. So, you know, we are doing a lot of that training. Periodization being based off of the general adaptation syndrome from Hans Seeley is completely flawed too. I mean, the dude electrocuted mice in the 1920s and weighed their brains. I have zero idea what that has to do with physical training, you know, but with that said, it's not that, you know, those, that recovery doesn't need to happen, or that, you know, what we witness isn't, you know, true. Like the lifter, the lifter trains and then the fatigue sets in and they need to recover from that fatigue, but it doesn't, the stages of the general adaptation syndrome absolutely do not apply to physical training. It doesn't make sense. But the idea is still there. So there has to be enough hard training mixed with enough recovery. So this is something that was really hammered home to me by Shaco when I was working with him, is you need the right amount of high stress days to drive progress, medium stress days to maintain progress, and lower stress days to allow for recovery. You know, and that's going to be different based off of each lifter and their individual circumstances. So that comes with the coach having experience and having a relationship with each lifter to be able to identify those days. You know, for me, like I have some really aggressive lifters. Because they're more aggressive, they hit an RPE 10 more often, which means they get rep work in blocks more often the following weeks. Where somebody who's a little bit more conservative will get more heavy singles because each week we can add 5 pounds. One way is not better than the other. It fits each person's personality. So it allows each person to have success under those same individual pieces. So the ones who are really having those high stress days get more medium and lower stress days. And the ones who have those more medium to high days get more of those medium to high days and have less lower days because they don't need as many because they're not pushing training. So it's flexible and adaptable and works into those, you know, and each lifter kind of self-organizes into their own little programs themselves. Load management is another thing that's also important. You know, with load management, what the coach needs to take into consideration is like certain training times for lifters, right? So like I have lifters that are in school, so they may have finals or projects and stuff like that. That may not be the best time to use. So I have testers and builders. A tester is something that comes with higher absolute loads. A builder has lower absolute loads. So if they're really stressed with school or something, I'm not going to have them max out their comp squats. We're going to do a variation that comes with a lower absolute load just because I think it's easier to recover from, or it tends to be easier to recover from. Or it may be a variation that the lifter really struggles with technically that also would drop the absolute load quite a bit. But they'll get back downs that kind of like will really work on the technique at those positions and stuff. You know, in the perfect scenario, what I like to do is I like to start with a variation that is extremely difficult and comes with a low absolute load, and build upon that and see how far we can take it. So maybe high bar wide stance squats, you max that out. You do high bar wide stance squats with chains, you max that out. You lower the bar position, you do low bar wide stance squats with chains. Then you add a box, you do low bar wide stance box squats with chains, and then you remove the box and the chains, you do low bar wide stance squats, and then you let them put their feet into a more comfortable position, and you go low bar medium stance squats, which is basically almost everybody's comp squat, and drive it up, right? So that would be like a way to start small and go big, right? And there's a lot of linear progression that happens in there with the weights, right? But it's fluctuating enough where there's a lot of weekly undulation that happens within that. And there's daily undulated periodization in the program too, because there's, you know, singles on one day, doubles, triples, or even up to 5 reps on other days. Like, all of those components in the periodization model fit into these schemes. It just seems to be more appropriate for a barbell sport, where block periodization or something like that seems more appropriate for field and court sports. But to each their own, because we know that periodization works, because a lot of people use it and a lot of people have success with it. So it's not saying that that doesn't work. It's just understanding the practical application of what pieces of those things work. And that's what I use in my program. It just doesn't look like a periodized program where each week something might increase or whatever it may be. You know, I hope that makes sense for people, that like training this, you know, I view it as a sport and we're training specific skills in the sport. Absolute strength is a skill. The ability to solve the problems of each lift with a close stance, medium stance, wide stance, close, medium, wide grip, with chains and bands and boxes and pauses and pins, giving the lifter different problems to solve within each lift allows them to explore what works best, what's weak and we really need to be better at, right? So it gives the coach the weaknesses to work on, the lifter the strengths to utilize in competitions, and it allows it, and it just has this like natural self-organization to all of those things. The program just almost kind of builds itself when the coach pays attention and utilizes their experience and whatnot. I know this is not like very popular of an opinion, is with the, you know, going against periodization and stuff. But it seems to be what I have found to work the best out of everything that I've tried in the past. You know, in the past, I started very sub-max and then increasing intensity. And the more we increased intensity, the stronger we got. But we got to a point where people were getting a lot more nagging issues. But now, I don't see the same nagging issues because we train those heavy singles. And then we have our technique work, which is either repetition-based or dynamic effort-based or whatever it is later in the week. And the program is flexible and adaptable based on the current lifter. So I use percentages to dictate loads, and they write last set RPEs on those loads. Now, one of the problems with periodization that, you know, also is they'll use percentages or RPEs, either one, right? But they'll, let's just use percentages as an easier example. You're basing it off of a 1 rep max. Well, maybe today that lifter, their 1 rep max is really 95% of their best. Right. So at least now when I use percentages, it's based off of a max single of that lift that was done within the last week or two. So we have a very accurate max. So the percentages tend to be very accurate for what we're looking for. But the lifter uses last set RPE as a means of, I'm giving them the external load. They're giving me feedback on what it feels like internally, and I'm adjusting the program based off of those variables. You know, on top of them being like, when nagging things come up, we need to address them. We either need to change positions or decrease some training load, decrease the intensity, decrease the volume, whatever it may be. But we need to be flexible and adaptable to those situations. And a periodized program tends to be less flexible and adaptable because it's, you know, you have a hypertrophy block. So we need to do all high volume stuff. Well, what if the high volume stuff starts to create these nagging issues, right? Like, you'll never know if heavy singles feel better for the lifter because you're nowhere near doing them. And now they're so tired from the volume that they're incapable of hitting those heavy singles. Or they don't change positions enough. And when they do, the absolute loads are just low everywhere else outside of their comp lifts. And, you know, you give them, or you start using variation, and then they get frustrated with it because they don't have that, the psychological pieces to understand that, like, this is how training typically goes. Like, I get the whole building success, but it's not a linear process, you know, by using lighter weights, but it's not a linear process. And part of having success in the long term is accepting the failures that are going to happen along the way, that those failures teach you things and allow you to get better over time. You know, and I think another thing that people need to remember too is, like, everybody thinks they're in a plateau when they haven't seen progress in a few weeks. Like, I think plateaus are inevitable no matter what. You just got to keep training. You got to be consistent with something. Constantly changing programs, or because something's not going well and changing it up isn't necessarily always the best option. You know, we change up things a lot. So, like, things are always changing. So it's not really that, you know, super necessary for us to have to do more changing of things. But if you don't vary a lot of things, yeah, maybe changing one or two things in training and see how you respond to it, I think, is extremely important in those situations. You know, for the programs that don't use a ton of variation. You know, I think I've kind of said most of the stuff that I feel is important on this topic. You know, I'm just trying to think of, like, anything else. I just, you know, I think John Kiley's work, he did a podcast with Clinical Athlete. He's done podcasts with Mike DeSherer, and they're very good listens. And he talks about a lot of the flaws of periodization. I did a podcast with Dr. Lonecki where we talked about singles and stuff and how important they are. I think that's a good one to listen to in these circumstances. If you like coming in and you like having a plan and writing that stuff down and doing linear periodization and daily undulated periodization, we know it's successful for a lot of people. By all means, keep doing it. I just have more fun doing it this way. I like doing it this way. It's a little bit different. You know, and at the end of the day, like, it just seems like, especially in the USAPL and, like, for my Instagram and stuff, everybody just does the same stuff. And, like, there's only so many ways you can prepackage a daily undulated periodization program. And, you know, if you're a coach and you do that, like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But, like, for me, I want to offer something different, something that's more fun. Because, you know, in the gym, when we're taking heavy singles, like, we have a lot of fun. Everybody's cheering each other on. We're spotting. We're loading. We're talking shit. We're, like, it's a very fun environment. It makes competing more fun because you're not scared of the weights. You're not super nervous. There's normal competition nerves, but you lift heavy all the time. It's a walk in the park, and your skill of competing is, and, like, you can really enjoy the sport. And even better, everybody I coach has a job, and some have a job and they're in school and doing all of this stuff. Our training sessions are an hour, hour and a half max. We don't need to spend 3 or 4 hours in the gym on a given day. So I find that to be very helpful in terms of just, like, living life. But I have a blog post up on this where I'm pretty sure I said everything on there. But it's, I think I titled it as Periodization Necessary for Strength Sports. You can go read that. If you have any questions, by all means, you can reach out to me. You can follow us on Instagram. Our team is Precision Powerlifting Systems. My personal Instagram is KWCan. Stay strong, Boston.